Hello and welcome to the Nattercast for our Breaking Bad backcast for episodes 105 and 106 of the first season, Gray Matter and Crazy Handful of Nothing. My name is Jason Shankle with Shankle Studios. I'm here as always with my lovely wife,
Sione Baloney.
Sione Shankle of Shankle Studios. And we're going to be nattering tonight about Breaking Bad, the first season. We're trying to get through all of the first four seasons in time to catch up to the fifth season when it premieres, hopefully very soon, because this show is getting very, very good.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Before we get into it, I want to do just a little quick business here for our contact information. You can join us on Facebook at Nattercast, all one word, N-A-T-T-E-R-C-A-S-T. You can email us at Nattercast, N-A-T-T-E-R-C-A-S-T, at gmail.com. And you can subscribe and rate and write reviews of us on iTunes. If you search for Nattercast under podcasts, you'll find us there. We cover Breaking Bad and Sons of Anarchy, and we will soon be covering Dexter.
Yes.
But tonight it's Breaking Bad.
Yeah, tomorrow night we'll probably do... tonight we're going to watch Sam Crow and Dexter.
Well, Sam Crow's tomorrow.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But yes, we're watching Dexter tonight. We're watching Sam Crow tomorrow. Yes. We'll be getting those shows out.
We're just going to slam out the dark casting.
Yeah, we like the dark stuff.
Yes.
We do like the dark stuff.
Heavy character-driven dark stuff.
Character-driven, yeah, totally. Speaking of the dark stuff, this is two of my, I don't want to say favorite so much, but like two of the episodes of the first season I think are like the most important in the development of this show, because these are the episodes that where we see some real, to use the chemistry metaphor, there are real phase changes, you know, in these characters and in the status of the show. They like go from being like gas to liquid to solid. Here, and we see some emergence of some themes that are going to be with us for quite a while.
So it was a clever use of chemistry metaphors.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I'm trying to be as reactive as I can to
I got it.
Y'all know how much you love the puns.
Baby.
Anyway, so let's just kind of get into it. The first big topic here in Gray Matter. Gray Matter is the name of Walter's old company that he worked at with Elliot Schwartz, who's kind of this like, sort of like, you know, nebbishy, sickly sort of looking Silicon Valley CEO type, you know, who had evidently some business vision. And they started this company, Gray Matter.
I would have called him a pretentious geek, not nebbish.
Pretentious geek, okay, but he's a little kind of softish. He's not an alpha hard guy.
He's pretentious geek.
Pretentious geek.
Sure. We know a lot of these people because
we're Silicon
of our work world and where we live.
Yeah. We are Silicon Valley people.
Yes.
Know? So he seems like he could have been a Google founder or an Apple founder or one of those kind of guys. You know,
he's a classic startup guy.
Classic startup geek guy. And he's like rich. He's got this opulent house and everything. And Walter and Skyler come to
the Eric Clapton guitar.
He gets the Eric Clapton Stratocaster. Wow. Oh, the invitation said no gifts. So Walter brought ramen.
That was great.
I've been in this situation, you know, where you kind of brought a gag gift. And I've never been to a party with anybody got an Eric Clapton Stratocaster, but I've been there where people have gotten like cars and, you know, expensive things. And it's like, oh, I got you this clown thing, kind of look like you. You know, so I thought because like, remember when you broke your nose, it was all red.
Well, remember when the first birthday present you gave to me was a big Tonka truck backhoe, and I used it to serve the cake.
Yes, but you liked that.
I did. I still love it.
That was a gag gift, it was an apt gag gift.
Yeah. It was great.
We have this great picture of you like digging into
just
the cake.
Going for it.
So I knew I'd met the right girl, you know, at that point. Yeah. Knew how to take a truck to a cake. You do belong in Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
No cake is safe from Sion. You know, and so... So we start to see Walter's, some of his character definition coming out here, and he sees all this opulent wealth, you know, and like Schwartz has got this great library and he's got this great, like, you know, sort of McMansion going on, and you get the sense he's got a lot of stuff. And he's also, oh, there's our dog jingling again. She's doing well, everybody, as always. And also we find out that Elliot is with Gretchen, and Gretchen, who we saw in a flashback before, was Walter's, evidently his girlfriend in... It looked like college, you know, maybe.
I just do not like that woman. I do not like the cut of her
jib. And also, she looks like something off the cover of, like, KQED magazine.
She just...
In that one shot.
She just does not smell right.
She doesn't smell right at all, no. And we kind of get the sense, you know, in this and in subsequent scenes, or not the sense, it's pretty clear that Gretchen and Walter were together, and then Gretchen left Walter for Elliot for whatever reason.
Money.
Could be the money, but Walter was in a position to make just as much. You know, get the sense that they both were, you know, if he'd stayed in the company.
Mm-hmm.
So there's money, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe vision, and maybe even temperament, and maybe ability to do business, you know. Things mm-hmm. like that. She sort of just figured Elliot was a better bet, you know. But it's not clear to me. But this creates kind of the basis for Walter having a lot of resentment toward Elliot and toward Grey Matter. And then Elliot offers him this, you know, cancer treatment to pay for his cancer treatment. He turns him down. Like Skyler and Hank are like, why, dude?
Yeah, that's pretty selfish because now the burden is on his family.
Right.
And I get it on one level why he would do that, to not want to be in debt or to take from somebody. But it's not going to hurt this guy. And a little tiny of discomfort about that it's from this person who may have betrayed him, we think.
Yeah.
Versus watching his family be in agony because they're going to lose their breadwinner and the person they love, and or having to go into severe debt to save him. It's just, but that is Walter. He is a bit arrogant.
Very arrogant. Yeah. And he's putting them in.
He can be very single-minded.
And he thinks he's doing this right and noble thing.
Oh yeah, it's my way or the highway with him.
But it's, he also crafts it in this form of like, I don't want to put you in this position, Skylar, having to take care of me. I don't want to be this guy. He has this idea.
And then he goes away and after he says it, he rejects the first offer that could have fulfilled that promise.
Right, because you can pay for nurses and a hospital. They'll take care of you. Skylar won't have to be too inconvenienced except for visiting you. You know, and
ridiculous.
So it's. It's classic Walter.
Yes, it is.
You know, it really builds his characters that he rationalizes his pride. And the kind of the theme here is that pride goeth before the fall. You know, is that he rejects mm-hmm. this offer. And it's not just an offer to take care of him medically. Elliot offers him a job. And you get the sense that his offer is sincere and respectful, even though he's consciously doing it, mm-hmm. you know, to because of the cancer.
Or some guilt or something.
He's got some guilt. And he also very much respects Walter's abilities, and that's consistent with what we see throughout. The other co-workers he had there are like, oh, this is the guy who solved that crystalline problem for us in 2 seconds. And we're seeing in these episodes he really is a chemical genius,
mm-hmm.
right? And so Elliot would naturally want to hire him, and you get the sense that the only reason he hasn't been reaching out and making these offers is because he ran off with his girlfriend or his fiance or whatever, right? And that's obviously uncomfortable and whatever. So
also, like, today, having a chemistry degree mm-hmm. is the hottest degree right now. You are guaranteed the highest paying job when you get out of college if you have one.
Yeah, or chemical engineering.
So there's a lot of job opportunities, but he's just refusing them.
Right. It's so weird. High school chemistry teacher, and I work at a car wash.
I mean, I know that he's extremely passionate about chemistry.
Right.
So that it would make sense that he would want to teach.
Yes, but...
And that's great, and he looks like a great teacher. But it is a little odd that he would burden his family with the extra hours and the tasking of going doing the car wash and just all that that does. Yeah. And, you know, when he had another,
Plus, you don't get, you would think as a teacher, because he's clearly got some passion for teaching as well. But as a high school chemistry teacher, you don't get to do any interesting chemistry. It's all very basic, very rudimentary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not engaging with kids who are highly passionate about learning the subject matter. So he's, you know, it doesn't seem like he's getting a lot out of being a chemistry teacher that someone with just a basic liberal arts degree with some science.
I'm hoping,
For
those of you who are listening to this podcast that are just now starting to watch Breaking Bad, because you're some of our friends who we've been harassing for the last several years, that this is the best show ever made for television, ever.
Ever.
And we want you to know that especially after these last two episodes, the fresh ones right now, Oh my God,
you are in for a ride.
Just
stay
keep
with
watching
it.
In order. Just keep watching in order.
Don't skip around.
You are going to be so well rewarded by Vince Gilligan, right?
Gilligan.
Right.
Gilligan. Oh, little buddy.
He's just such a comprehensive genius.
Yeah, and Yeah, and everything we're—I mean, that's why I'm kind of dwelling. Slowly.
But I do want that resolved. I want to know a little bit more about his motivation for becoming a teacher and not.
I want to find
getting
out
another chemical job or chemistry job. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so you know, that's the first big thing we're seeing here is Walt is a very prideful man, and he tragically rejects a situation that he was relatively clear of this meth thing. Pinkman is relatively clear of it at this point. He could get the best treatment. He could walk out with a job. He could get back to this company. And you got to figure it's been, he told the story of meeting Skylar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Skylar is 41 years old or about to be 41.
Mm-hmm.
She had Walter Jr. is 15. Mm-hmm. So she had Walter Jr. I'm going to do a little timeline here. She had Walter Jr. when she was 25, 26.
Yeah.
Which means, and we heard the story about how they met at the diner where she was a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to have been when she was probably 22, 21.
And he was pushing 30.
And he's pushing
over
30. He's over 30.
Yeah. Because he's turning 50 in this,
He's
right?
turning 50. He's 10 years older than she is, or 9 years older.
Yeah.
And so that means that he was probably 30, 31 at the time he met her, and he wasn't with Gretchen.
Mm-hmm.
And he finishes his thesis with Elliot. If he was on time, probably when he was 25, 26. If he was a little early, it would have been 25, right? So he was at this company for 5-6 years, maybe. Loses this relationship. And then maybe he starts going, looking for Skylar. Maybe she was like a rebound kind of thing for him. That he was feeling down at that moment, vulnerable at that moment when he met her. Because he had just been through this process with Elliot
and
with Gretchen.
She's totally the opposite of Gretchen.
She's the opposite of Gretchen.
Extremely practical, extremely down to earth.
Totally.
You know, very outspoken about these are my morals and we're going to follow them.
Yeah. And you almost forget the age difference between them.
Yes.
Because of it, because she's so very, like, you know, very much.
You can tell when you see them. I thought the clothes they wore to that party, that was some good art direction. The clothes they chose to wear.
Oh, the clothes they chose to wear. He got this, like, he looks like Thurston Howell's towel attendant. With his ascot. His little like skipper jacket.
Oh, that was a good one. I didn't see that one coming.
I got some way homers.
And she looks like she's going to a prom.
The prom
in 1985.
She looks like the MILFy teacher who dresses up for prom when she's supervising.
But it's they usually don't dress that.
They usually
trashy.
Don't. I'm saying it's weird.
It was a Halloween costume.
Like they were totally dressed in like this these Halloween costumes.
And everyone else was like in beige.
Oh, well, there was the whole professor group in beige. Yes. So I don't feel too bad about dressing like
that.
That
was
admiral.
Good art direction.
It's
thank
like how
you
do their admiral.
I made a point to look at the art director's name, and then I, of course, didn't write it down.
But then we have Gretchen in her kitchen. And then we pull back, and it's this incredibly expensively appointed kitchen with terrible taste. It's just really awful, but pricey awful.
I don't think I would say it was terrible taste. It's not your taste, and it's not my taste.
No, I will say, no.
It's not the very classic Southern California, kind of the contemporary mansion.
But there were some clashes as well that you would expect from somebody who had kind of a multiple exposure. You know, she had like the country kitchen. Rooster like next to these like translucent bowls and things like that. I just thought it clashed. You know, it was I guess a terrible might be the wrong word, but it clashed. But it's not my taste.
Jason doesn't know much about interior decorating.
No, I don't. But I just thought it was an awful kitchen. It's my nightmare kitchen.
It would have been mine. I wouldn't want to begin to think how to maintain that thing.
It's going to be expensive to clean. So anyway. Okay, so now jumping over to our other partner here, we have our potential spin-off show, Badger and the Pinkman. Or Pinkman and the Badger.
Is it Skinny Pete and Badger?
Well, it's not. Yes, and also
Those
Skinny
Pete,
friends. But this is where he meets Badger in the Dollar Bill outfit.
Yes.
He's like working the sales
Those
job.
Actors that play that are just such incredibly quirky, interesting.
Skinny and Badge?
Yeah, Skinny Pete and Badger. Great character acting.
They really is, yeah.
Just great. Their voices, their mannerisms are just great.
Yeah, I love Skinny Pete and Badger are just perfect. And I kind of have this thing. Okay, so I have this sort of perspective on Jesse, especially now, you know, not to spoil, but retrospectively, that, you know, he's smarter than he appears to be. And he's kind of fronting you know, his milieu, which is he grew up in this kind of white boy hipster, you know, or a hip hop, you know, phony gangster world. And Badger and Skinny Pete kind of represent his peer group. And so the whole kind of yo bitch rolling pants down thing is kind of like he's fitting in more than it being inherent to his personality to be that way. That if he was raised in a different environment, he would have, if he was raised in a cowboy environment, he'd be acting like a cowboy. If he was raised, you know, in some other environment, he's trying to fit in. And I think that that's coming from a place of, you know, and that's sort of part of what's coming up with him and Walter, is that he's looking for a father.
Yes, he's very much looking for a father.
And looking for a father is about looking for an example, mm-hmm. right? And he has no example, so he kind of does the Skinny Pete and Badger thing, mm-hmm. you know, and he
throws lots of different weird noodles on the
yeah.
wall to see what sticks.
Right. Oh, because you see his yo-bitchery kind of come down in this
episode. Yo-bitchery?
Well, it does. I mean, he's kind of like, they have him in the suit for a little while, and you can see that he can interview.
The cult of yo-bitchery.
Yeah.
That Pinkman is running.
You know, is that everybody's a bitch.
To yeah. Bitch. He has that plaintive horse whine. That's
he calls Walter either Mr. White or bitch.
Right.
You know, you would think Walter would be a nice middle ground name yeah. to call
him. Yeah, what happened? Well, I could just call him
Walter.
Walty.
Walter. Yo, Mr. White, bitch.
Bitch. Yeah, can you get it. You do voices better than
bitch.
I do.
Bitch.
Yeah.
But the thing is... But you were saying everybody...
Oh, everyone's a bitch to him.
But and I was saying, yeah, they are. He's living in a world of bitches.
Yes, he is.
He's
running the cult of bitchery.
He's in the bitches of Eastwick.
Bitch!
He's a master of bitchcraft. So Badger and the Pinkman.
Badger and the bitch boy.
So Badger's got a line on like pounds and pounds of pseudoephedrine. You know, and he... You know, gets Jesse to, then they go out and they cook in the RV. And oh, I wanted to bring this up. So, okay, if you listen to the other podcasts, you know, there's some
which we recommend,
you know, especially the Breaking Good cast is great. And the Behind the Cutting Edge guys are hysterical. They have this whole like morning zoo Mason Dixon thing going on. That's just a lot of fun. But everybody, like every single podcast, especially this season, is like bringing up Chekhov's gun, mm-hmm. right? Which is that old...
I know this has been vexing you all week.
It's been vexing me because it is a very apt description of a certain kind of foreshadowing, right? But it's a cliche. Everyone always says Chekhov's mm-hmm. this and Chekhov's that. And people, even on the cast, are saying, I'm tired of the Chekhov thing. But it's like, you know, every time they...
But it does work, yeah.
So I'm going to... And I've been looking for a way to avoid it because I know we're getting into some Chekhov territory, Chekhovian territory. So I've decided that I'm not going with Chekhov. I'm going with Chekhov's gun. I'm going with Badger's crossbow. And that principle is that if you introduce a crossbow in the first act of a television show, you better shoot an RV with it by the third act. Otherwise, you've introduced a red herring crossbow.
This whole Badger thing has become a real theme for us.
Yeah, he's got that crossbow.
Because I've been calling myself a Badger in the Fog.
Well, you're the Badger in the Fog.
For the last month.
Do you have a crossbow?
I'm going to change that my little micro bio thing on HuffPost.
I'm a badge in the
front. Right now it says, all my opinions are done sans pants.
Sans
without
pants.
Without pants.
The pantsless.
And what I really love about that is I can always tell when somebody's having a breakdown over something I've written and they can't argue back.
Yeah.
They start going after my pantslessness.
They deride your pantslessness. It's hate speech.
I mean, like, come on. I leave enough grammar errors. Why do you have to go after my pantsless? By the way, I don't have pants on right now.
Can't you at least attack me on
that? I'm wearing a nightshirt, a Christmas nightshirt, because it's raining and gross out here in San Francisco, and it's not supposed to be. Damn it.
Damn it.
I want some nice Breaking Bad sunny vistas.
Sunny vistas, yeah. Well, speaking of the sunny vistas, the Badger and the Pinkman are out in the RV, and Badger's got all of this cold medicine, and they're cooking up. And they cook up what looks to be an impressive amount of methamphetamine.
And impressive quality.
And impressive quality. And
but
Jesse
no.
will have none of it because he has been infected, incepted
yes.
with Walter's standards. And it is not glass. It's not, you can't fucking
right.
use it to make make a right. microscope out of. You can't use it to look at the moons of Jupiter.
You can't cut diamonds with it.
You can't fucking cut glass with it. So he throws it out in the dirt, and it's like, you know, pseudoephedrine's hard to come by. That's something they've established on the
right.
show. So you would think that, okay, it's not Walter White level, but it's certainly sellable, and you could make maybe five or $10,000, you know, off of this inferior quality, better than anybody else's stuff that you've got, you know? Considering that you can't just keep cooking all the time, right? You're taking this big risk. Right. It also is very explodey, you know? If you can actually get through it without being exploded at or phosphined, you know? So, but the point, the thematic point is obviously Jesse having these standards. And I think that's part of where his little intelligence comes up, mm-hmm. you know, is that you see that, no, he really did appreciate what Mr. White did for him.
Bitch.
Mr. White. I got my Erlenmeyer flask, bitch. I got my cook.
Oh, that was great. He was so like showing off that he'd actually, because he didn't pay attention when he was taking class with bitch. The teacher, bitch.
With Walker, bitch.
But he does when they're cooking math together. We learn that he has memorized all these things and he's very proud of knowing these things. Which dovetails into your idea that you think he might be smarter than he's letting us
know. Well, also, yeah, I actually kind of identify with him a little bit, and I think that's part of it as well. I had an experience like this.
Really?
In college. I took linear algebra. I was
an this is going to be good.
I took engineering in college, and I took linear algebra.
I've ginned up the geek. Here we go.
And I could not be bothered to learn this stuff, because it is fucking dull as hell. It's in matrices and vectors, and I don't care. It's pointing that way, and then it's pointing that way. Why don't you just point that way, baldy bitch? And I had a teacher who looked like Mr. White, too.
No.
Well, he was bald. He looked like Heisenberg. Well, we're not going to get into it. I don't want to spoil that. He looked like bald bitch.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so, and I took it like twice. Like got a D or something. I had to take it again. I took it again. I got a B. I'm okay. Got through.
At UCLA?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you kidding? No, you ever got a D in anything?
Oh, yeah. No, I had some problems. I did better at the end. I got through. But, I mean, I was trying to learn how to live like an adult, man. It was, you know, I had a lot going on.
Well, you had some pizza boxes going on.
I had some pizza boxes.
I've heard stories.
I broke bad in a couple of ways. You know, we were right
You had a little gambling thing going.
We were right by Tijuana.
Oh, you're gambling in your
roommate. Horn. I'm gambling in my horn. It really was my gambling in my horn. And the boozing. The boozing, the gambling, and the whoring had an impact. You know, but I got through. This was later. This was sort of post-boozing, gambling, whoring. This was more in sophomore, junior year when I shaped up. But nonetheless, I just had trouble with it, right? Okay. So then years later, I became a computer game developer and working in 3D. And 3D computer game design and the physics for 3D games is all linear algebra, right? You have to apply all this stuff. Only now it makes video games, you know? And I'm like, well,
so it became
bitch,
cool.
I
kind of like when chemistry...
Exactly. So
for these guys, it's cool now. Chemistry's cool.
Precisely.
For Pinkman,
I had my Pinkman moment. I'm like, oh yeah, bitch! I can make this in 3D. Fucking A.
Now,
you know, like
I
when I saw Quake. I saw Quake for the first time when I was learning this stuff. I'm like, oh, now I see. You know, and now I have kids coming to me. I'm older. This is like 15 years later, right? Who like, oh, how do you become a game developer? I'm like, you got to pay attention, linear algebra. Trigonometry and physics, and they're like, oh really?
Their faces when you say that. I love the faces of the parents who have like 8 and 10 year old boys that are worshiping you, and then they hear when you start talking about all the math, and the kids are like, oh maybe I'll just test games.
Yeah, totally. I'll just test games. Oh, that means having to do the same bogus level again and again and again the way you wouldn't do it. You have to play like the girl all because you're gonna get the girl test,
right?
Yeah, you get to play the girl character. Oh, I'm not gonna play the girl character. Yeah, you are. It's on the fucking list, boy. You should have paid attention in class. You can be a programmer. All right, I'm way off the reservation here, but the point is the other Chekhovian moment here, the Badgerian moment, is we introduce
Badger's
stroke rag, which says that if you are going to introduce pornography in one episode of a show, Walter White has to be disgusted by it in the second episode. Because we have the whole cook montage, right? We have the little jump cut, speedy cook montage with Jesse and Badger. And Badger, before this, brings in his bag. He's got his crossbow, and he's also got this porn rag. And we catch him spanking it, like, over in the passenger seat a couple times. Because they're smoking meth, right? That makes you really want to try to masturbate.
Try to rub your dick off.
You'll rub it right off because you're not going to come for days.
I remember going to a party once and the host announced, like halfway through it, that he was high on speed. And I thought something was up. And then he wanted to give people a tour of his bedroom to show us this pile of sweat where he'd been laying and masturbating.
Oh, that's nice.
And I'm like...
Was that Badger or Skinny Pete?
I mean, this is many years ago, but I was just like, you know, some of my friends, this is another one of the, you know, the big Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley.
This is in Vegas. There's a slip. Sion or Freudian slips. Another, you know, smarty pants, genius geek boy down in Santa Clara.
Look at my masturbation sweat.
And his big accomplishment is his puddle of sweat.
He's really worked it up, right?
I'm like, okay. I guess some people just feel the need to rub off some of those extra smart brain cells they got.
Iceman feels the need for speed. Jesus.
All right, we're off the reservation.
Anyways, well, and you know, and in this scene, we're starting to see some of the stuff that's going to stick with us in the show, including the cinematography. They do the time lapse.
Oh,
you know, and they do these wide vistas.
Gorgeous.
And then the last element of this particular episode is the Walter Jr. beer run moment. Where he's out there with his friends and they're
just
like...
Just playing teenager.
Playing teenager and start trying to size people up for beer. And of course, Walter Jr. picks the cop. You know, I think...
Well, you told me, now watch this.
It is.
Look, Sion, watch this. He really is good at clocking people. Because he's like sizing different people up.
Right.
But he doesn't want to go up to that one guy. And then they tell him to and it turns out...
He's a cop.
He's
right.
A cop. Yeah.
Well, no, it's... It's that he's kind of good at the size up, but he's just like Walter, he takes this stupid risk with the wrong kind of guy.
Well, the guys told him to.
Yeah. And the guy said, how about that guy? How about that guy? Mm-hmm. And get kind of pushed into it, you know, and then he ends up, he calls Hank, you know, of course. And says, this is my dad, you know, and he gets out of it and everything. And there's going to be an intervention. They kind of drop this whole line. This kind of gets Hank involved. And then Hank says, well, you know, he's just upset about his dad being sick and he was smoking pot. And then Skylar's like, no, he wasn't smoking pot. And then,
right.
You know, and then there's a whole bust on that. And it turns out that, you know, Skylar kind of outs Walter, senior,
mm-hmm.
on he's pot smoking and wandering and not taking treatment and all this kind of stuff. And the whole Walter Jr., like, you're in trouble for buying beer thing just disappears. And we take up this more important issue. And I kind of feel like that whole subplot was kind of dropped. You know, like, maybe it's a little bit like the baby, you know, as we start to see the baby.
Don't give away things.
Well, no, I'm not going to give anything away, but it's like we see in the show periodically this, like, the children are really a second thought to the parent, to Walter and Skylar sometimes.
Yeah.
You know.
Sometimes it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. It's like,
well, did you know that you have a kid?
Yeah.
Because this plot would require that you have that information.
You know.
You just can't go do all these things. How come your kid never cries and it's a newborn?
Well, and like, who are Walter Jr.'s friends? You know, we see him with these friends.
Well, I know he has some social challenges.
Yeah,
he's talked about that.
Yeah, and how's he doing in school and what are his favorite...
He's so handsome and nice. You'd think he'd be really popular.
He's wonderful. That's what I'm saying. I want more of this character.
Oh, well, you know, I just think he's incredible and I can't wait to see him do more work.
I'd like to see, yeah, totally. I mean, and he's got... he really has it's not MS, it is...
Muscular dystrophy?
Cerebral
palsy?
Cerebral palsy, yeah, CP, yeah. And apparently it's a lighter case than his character has. But I'd be interested in seeing... I've seen him do a couple interview things and things like that. I think he can... Yeah, he's
gorgeous.
Striking, he's a good actor, you know? And I don't think he's going to be too limited by his handicap. I think he's going to go a lot of places.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. But so they decide to have an intervention with Walter.
Great idea. Because of all the people in the world, Walter's personality is the most amenable to an intervention.
To a completely unstructured...
Talk about just lighting a fire under his ass and
generalized berating of the most put upon guy in the Southwest.
No.
Who is so over his family that
he just added gasoline to his little fire.
Wants to die. He wants to blow some cars up. And he wants to die.
Yeah.
And that's it. And well, again, we see here they just sort of concentrated this dynamic really well, right? We have... Walter's pride. He sits there quietly while Skylar and Marie get into it, and Hank is just like, you gotta keep betting, buddy. You gotta keep, you know, grab your balls and jump out of the window and just all this like tough guy stuff. It's like, okay, yeah, but there's cancer.
Then you there's know. The fact that I'm tired and sick. I'm tired and sick. This is messing with my head. And,
yeah, and I get
you know, it's a big deal. Cancer's huge.
It is huge, you know, and especially this is like stage 3 lung cancer. I mean, he didn't have any symptoms, and then they think stage 3, you know, and that's right in the lungs and stuff, you know, everything. But, you know, he gives this monologue. We talked about it a little bit earlier about he doesn't want to be this sickly, dependent, unproductive guy marking time. He wants to have a purpose to his life, right? And that's where we're really starting to see the superhero origin story come up.
Yes,
right, because that's the essence of a superhero, is somebody who is looking for the purpose of their life. Great power, great responsibility. Batman's avenging his parents' deaths, whatever it is. Right, and so, and of course, nobody else in the room is getting that read off of him at all that this is coming. You know, so and then Hank had his cheese and
they're patronizing him. They're not like really just letting him have these feelings that are completely warranted.
Yeah, and it's Marie who says it. She's the one who does that very much with people. She kind of like gets in and says, "Well, I'm going to make these decisions for you." She and Skylar have that in common. Mm-hmm. It's their sisterly trait, and they do it to each other. It's great sister dynamic.
Yes,
isn't it?
Very realistic.
Very realistic kind of thing. But here, she finally takes Walt's side for a minute and says, "Hey, maybe he gets to make this choice himself." Maybe he gets to decide how he's going to live his life. You know,
and he does,
and it causes all this hostility.
And then he does.
And then he does. Right. So getting on to that.
And then we get to have this really crazy show.
Yeah. Moving on to the next episode. The last thing on this episode was Hank, and this is something we'll see one or two more times without spoiling anything throughout the show. It's not a big theme, but it's this little tiny thing I've noticed, like once or twice a season, where somebody brings the either the vegetable platter. Or the fruit, in this case, it's the fruit and cheese platter to the difficult conversation meeting. And they wait and it's wrapped up. Walter walks in and Hank leans forward and unwraps.
Because eating those things is exactly what's on your mind when there's that kind of emotional confrontation.
You don't want to be having blood sugar issues.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is. And Hank just like starts gobbling up the cheese.
Because he just doesn't care.
The crack. It's like, I've been hungry all afternoon. I'm glad you finally got here. Yeah. Okay, moving on now to, what is it? I'm getting the title here. Now, it's Crazy Handful of Nothing is the name of this episode. And here we establish, so basically Pinkman and the Brain decide they're going to cook together because Walter needs money. He's going to decide ultimately to go for the chemo. Pinkman can't do the cook on his own the way to his own standards. He needs Walter's help to achieve the new Jesse Pinkman standard of quality that he's going to provide for his crank. And so Walter here establishes what is one of the many impossible premises for the show. As you hear it, you know that this is impossible and it's just not going to happen. It's what's so exciting about it, where he says, "I am the silent partner here. I am the guy who cooks for you. I don't want to know our business partners. I don't know. I don't want to know how you make the money. I don't want to know anything about it. I just want the money. You don't mention my name, you know." And he's trying to keep this compartmentalized, this Clintonian wall of separation between what he's doing and where the money's coming from. And of course, we know that there's just no way that this is going to work, right? And so we then, you know, we have a cook scene, right? And then we have Jesse go out in this, again, with this interesting photography that's sort of the Scooby-Doo, like, Mad Men-sounding little music track while he's selling in the street.
Yes.
On the cook, right? And it's like, oh, the city's coming to life. And you kind of see this pulsing rhythm with the time-lapse photography of how the city is being brought to
life. Yeah, that time-lapse photography is just really well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't know when they're going to do it, and it kind of always catches you, but it's always like this nice little surprise, and then it's not trite. It's not, they really do it in a clever way, and they do that throughout all the seasons.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also see that Jesse has to start picking up and learning that he can't just leave Walter to cook. We see this shot with Jesse kind of sitting out and just being bored and being the lookout, and Walter's trying to mix, and they show you, which is really kind of nice, they show you how like noxious this pseudoephedrine process is, you know, with the bubbling red phosphorus and the iodine and just this yellow smoke coming out of this RV. You'd think the neighbors would notice the smell on the RV. You'd think it would absorb it a little bit, you know. And Walter's there, and he's got lung cancer. He's dying of lung cancer. It's growing rapidly, and he's got this mask on, and he's choking and losing air. He'd probably be passing out, you know, in a hospital ward. And here he's mixing meth, and he can't do it by himself. He has to have Jesse go in and do some of it. So here we start seeing the origin of, like, the Robin character in Batman and Robin, right? Jesse has to step up and learn how to do this, right? And Walter's going to be teaching him a little bit. And then Jesse goes out and sells, and then comes back. And he's like, you know, I got 26 large, dude. He's like, $26,000, that's all? Yeah, I've been out on the street all night selling crank, and I got $26,000 in my pocket from the skeevy people downtown.
And that's not impressive.
And if that's not enough, oh, I'm going to need more. You know, so this blows the silent partner out the window. He says...
Walter is so hard on Pinkman.
He's hard on Pinkman.
He's relentlessly.
But like a good teacher, remember?
He's over the top.
But the metaphor, he's like, you have to apply yourself.
Yes.
We have to think outside the box, you know, get a bigger head about this and just like be visionary.
But his own dad is a little bit like that.
Yeah. And so we completely throw out the silent partner routine.
Yes.
And Walter starts fucking with the business and saying, we need... What Walter says is true, I guess. If you're making this much, you want to move one big amount to one big guy. You want to take one big risk. You don't want to be out there trying to hustle.
Right.
Like $100,000 with a crank.
Retail is for suckers.
Retail's for suckers.
For bitches.
For bitches. For the bitch crew.
Yeah, you want to be the wholesale guy.
You want to be the wholesale guy. And so he asks Pinkman, well, don't you know anybody, like, basically in middle management, you know, in this? And it's like, I did, and then you killed him. See, that's my
Pinkman. So great.
That is so great. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Oh.
We dissolved his body.
Well, there is that.
There is that.
Don't you remember the whole bathtub scene?
And that was, like, his friend from childhood. It was like from the third grade.
Yes.
You know. So it's like, I just dissolved somebody that I learned how to spell with. So maybe you could find us. You know.
Oh, you are really cracking me up tonight. This is great.
The Pinkman's going over well tonight. So, yeah. So then what do we do? We introduce Tuco as the, you know, it's like he's the guy who stepped up to replace Crazy Eight. I have a difficult time. Now, I know Crazy Eight was a hard mother, you know. I have a difficult time believing that he was preventing Tuco from stepping into anything that Tuco wanted. I would have been very interested in seeing what the territoriality was between Crazy Eight and Tuco. I guess he must have been working for Tuco. Tuco doesn't seem like the kind of guy who waits for territory to open up because people get dissolved by high school chemistry teachers. He's a little more proactive.
It's starting to sound... like a Disney villain.
Yes. Tuco. He's the bad lion. He gets that one song.
I'm going to dissolve you.
So Tuco's got this, he's like this tweaked out, like Scarface figure with this grill. He's like living in this security building. It's like something out of New Jack City. He's like, mm-hmm. He's like the Nino Brown of the 21st century, you know. And they're going to make the deal with him. And Skinny Pete is making the intro and the vouch. So you know you are on solid ground. Because when you are flying Skinny Pete Airlines, you're going to land on time. And in the right city.
Jesus. Help me.
Skinny Pete wants to introduce you to somebody.
You're going
to
make me wet myself.
Why don't you bring 5 figures worth of...
Skinny Pete Airlines.
Of highly illegal, you know, this is another great Pinkman line. He's like, oh yeah, you can just roll right up on an Iceman and say, excuse me, would you like to buy a felony amount of drugs from me? Sure, no problem. Actually, on Tuco, you could though. Tuco would go for that. So Jesse's a little off about Tuco. He'd buy from, you know, Hank. Hank, just, hey, would you like to buy some methamphetamine?
Bitch. Try to fit in. Bitch.
Oh, I'm trying to roll like the boys.
Bitch.
And the AB. I'm the A to the B to the Q. OG. Anyway, so we have Pinkman goes and with Skinny Pete and sees Tuco, and then there's the whole, like, you want your money now, I'll get it to you later. Yeah, Tuco's good for it. okay, whatever. He actually probably kind of would have been a little bit good for it in one sense, which is like, if you want more, you can pay me for the last batch. You know, going one batch in with Tuco might not have been a bad idea. Going two batches in and then never getting paid, you're going to take a beating one way or another. But I might have given him the one kind of, next time I see you, I'll have a, you know, you'll give me the money and then I'll give you another and you can be one behind. But that's because he had the middle teeth and I might just go for that, you know, jaws thing. Just like, don't bite my head off, literally. Tuco beats him with the money. And this is another count I want to be keeping. So we have the Walter White kill count is currently at 2. The Jesse Pinkman beatdown count is at 2 as well. He has been concussed when he was confronting Crazy Eight out in the woods, out in the desert. So he had an 8-ball hemorrhage from that, and now he has taken a serious body beating and head beating.
Did you just say 8-ball hemorrhage?
Well, he had an 8-ball hemorrhage, and 8-ball gave it to him. Why do you think they call him 8-ball?
Just okay.
Is that okay?
8-ball hemorrhage.
Do
I need to go to Medline and look that one up?
Yeah, I think it's an 8-ball hemorrhage. Is that a thing? Did I make that up? I make these things up. I don't know. He had his blood. His eye was full of blood.
No, I get you.
Honey. Okay. Anyway, The question is, how much damage can Pinkman take in the course of what is going to be a very short amount of time over the course of the show?
Mm-hmm.
Is that he takes a severe beating like every month. Like a hospitalization beating. Like every month in this job, you'd think he'd start to like... He does look through the want ads. He finds the job being a dollar bill guy, so I guess he'd rather take a beating. Okay. And so Jesse doesn't get the money, and so then we're going to have this moment now with Walt where he's going to go and get the money. But before that, we have Hank investigating the cook site that they found, which is the Jesse and Walter's cook site. And there's all this equipment that's leading back to the school. And Hank figures out that people are stealing from Walter's chemistry class. And Hank gets the wrong fish. It's this guy Hugo, who's this like Native American janitor, very sort of seemed like a very helpful guy. He's helping Walter out in the bathroom, but he had a joint and he was smoking some pot. So naturally, he's a methamphetamine cooker. But we couldn't find any evidence of that, so we arrested him in front of everybody. We didn't wait for him at his house. We didn't ask him any questions. We just assumed that this guy must be the one who stole it, not Walter, not one of Walter's kids, students, not Jesse Pinkman, who hangs out with these people, you know. So as part of that investigation, Hank is kind of getting in Walter's space a little bit, you know. And you had a theory that he's onto him from the beginning a little bit.
I started thinking that when we were watching the two shows we're talking about this evening. I started to think that at some point, and I'm going to start looking for it, that maybe he kind of gets it.
I think you're onto something there.
That he knows that Walter's into something or that he's involved in this.
He smells some hink on Walter.
Because he's just always taking... Well, that'd be giving away some stuff that's happening now. But it's like there's so many people that he could be talking to about mm-hmm. what is going to be known as the Heisenberg.
Yeah, it'll get
character, yeah. And this awful, fancy... crystal meth cooker, who is in fact Walter White, bitch.
It's better than Mr. Bitch. Yeah.
And
so, what do you think? Hank is onto him, kind of like he's definitely in his space a little bit on this chemistry
thing. I had the talking pillow.
Okay.
I just been waiting to use that.
Use it or lose it. You're like floating there, like looking at your doodle book.
It's a reference to the show.
I have the talking pillow, bitch. The Pinkman family.
I'm going to use that. Yeah. That's going to be some pretty moments. I'm going to do it in front of your family or something. And she's looking at you. I have the talking pillow.
I have the talking pillow.
But yeah, I think he's, because he just really relishes having these discussions with him.
Yeah. He's definitely
about chasing Heisenberg.
I think you're onto something with that. I think in this particular episode, because it's really very strong in this episode, this like Hank's onto me thing, that they definitely created that tension. My thought process is because he Hank, I buy as a sincere cop. You know, I think he wants.
Yeah, but if you notice, he does, we've already seen it in the beginning. He does play a little bit by his own rules, a little bit. Like he'll give free passes to people that he knows.
Yes.
So I'm almost thinking he might be passive aggressively helping Walter not get in trouble by giving him the heads up.
Or hinting to Walter that he needs to keep his powder dry. Because I don't think at this point he suspects that Walter is a methamphetamine cooker. I think he might suspect that Walter is selling school property to drug dealers.
Yes.
And he wants and so he's doing his little alpha thing, which is, because he does these couple times, he does this little joke of like, we wouldn't want to be suspicious of you now.
Right.
You know, when a cop says that to you, that means I'm clocking you completely.
Right.
But I don't think I think that if he was like, you're not cooking methamphetamine, are you? I think he's like, don't get into bed with dangerous people being their supplier on any part of this. Don't be giving them any chemicals. Don't be giving them any supplies. Because you're going to start feeling this kind of pressure from cops who are not your brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And he's like chesting in on him and doing that stuff. And I think he's a little scared straight thing from Hank out of that. Mm-hmm. But I think he sincerely thought was it Hugo was the guy. I don't think he arrested Hugo as a smokescreen or as an example. I think it was like, he's probably the guy, but I'll bet you that Walter helped him out, you know, kind of thing. Told him what to get. And so, apropos of this, there's the poker game. And the family poker game is one of the places where this comes out. And I have a little tiny thesis on the poker game that plays out. So basically, they're playing Texas Hold'em, right? And the hand that comes up is four hearts and two aces down to Hank and Walter facing off, okay? And so the possibilities here, the likely possibilities are that one of them has a flush. All you have to have is a heart and you have a flush. So if you have a high heart, you have a flush. The board is paired. There are two aces, which means that there's also a very good chance that someone has a full house, which beats a flush. And Hank and Walter are kind of trying to read each other here. And Hank is dropping all these double entendres about, you know, are you clean? And, you know, are you and all this other stuff, right? And the way that the hand plays out is that Hank says, do you have a heart? Mm-hmm. Right? So there's that. He's like trying to read Walter, trying to look for a tell. Do you have a heart? In doing that, Hank has done something which is a debatable tactic in poker, which is that he has an ace, but nothing else. So he has three of a kind. And he has what's called a trips, which is a weak three of a kind when two of the cards are on the board and you only have one of them. So it's not a very strong hand against a flush or whatever, right? So he's telegraphing to Walter, I have an ace, right? An ace in the hole. If you have a heart, you have me beat. Your heart beats my ace.
Yeah, very poetic.
Very poetic, right? But the other thing you could be doing there, and this came up in the Matt Damon movie, this is the way he played very similar hands, the same basic hand that Matt Damon played in Rounders, is if you have a full house, you want to imply to the other guy that you've got an ace and you don't believe he has the flush, right? To get him to push all in with a flush so you can produce your full house. And people are hip to that, right? So it's the I know that you know thing. So if you don't have the full house, you front that you do by pretending that you don't. And Hank plays that at every level. He's like, you got the flush? Like, you'll beat me if you do, but I'm going to bet heavy, meaning I might be sitting on a full house, I might not be. And he wasn't. And Walter goes all in on a stone bluff. He has nothing. He has 7-2 suited, which is the second worst hand you can have. And he went all the way to the river with it. So we see in this game, this psychological...
Can you tell Jason really likes to play poker?
I love to play poker. You see the two things. Well, first of all, obviously the metaphor of the heart. The other is the psychology of Walter's just stone bluffing a guy all in with nothing. Mm-hmm. And Hank is playing a double bluff.
Which we're going to see a lot of.
Yeah, and so
there's a lot of that's another it's a realization of their characters, particularly
absolutely
the bitches.
And then what happens is so Walter wins the hand, Hank folds, figuring Walter has the flush. It's very likely, you know. And then Marie picks up, he's holding ace king, and she says, "You threw out an ace and a cowboy?" She calls it a cowboy for then we get the title reference for a crazy handful of nothing. So we see Marie, she wants Hank to be pushing all in on stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then that finally gets us to the end of this episode, which we see foreshadowed in the beginning. We see Walter coming out, he's bald, he shaves his head and he starts to lose the hair from the chemo. And he's walking out of a flaming building carrying a bag covered in bloody money. Right? So you know from the beginning this whole I'm the silent partner thing is not going to
go. It's gone.
That is long gone. And what he Pitcher does...
Pitcher says 1,000 words, it is done.
It is done. He cooks up fulminated mercury. It looks like methamphetamine, I guess.
Here comes the blood money.
And here comes the blood money. He goes into Tuco's place, demands all this money, and then does this thing. This is a famous scene in the show. He ignites the fulminated mercury, and from the outside, you see...
He loves to explode things.
You see like two walls of Tuco's upper level secure complex blow out completely with like shrapnel and everything, and everybody inside's fine. They're fine. You know, it just blew out the top of this warehouse, but you guys are okay. You're not even burned. They're not even singed. Like, nobody's hair is burned from this fulminated mercury. And Tuco, this is apparently a fulminated mercury explosion is what it takes to snap Tuco into reasonableness and a businessman-like perception of his own best interest. He's like, okay, man. Yeah, sometimes, you know, you got to show some respect. You blew me up, and I respect that. But we can do some good business. You cook a good product. Here's your money. And Walter calls himself in this exchange, he calls himself Heisenberg.
Right.
From the German scientist, the Heisenberg.
Which was himself. One of the first little nicknames you gave me?
Yes. Well, I called you the Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle.
Mm-hmm.
Never know if you're over here or over here. Where is it going to go? So he's Heisenberg. And we're still waiting to meet Schrodinger and Bohr. We don't know who those guys are going to be. But so now this is, I like to call this episode Heisenberg Begins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because this is completely Batman. At this point, he's invented his alternative personality. Mm-hmm. You've shaved that awful hair-loomed rug off his head.
Yes.
That they must have had a fake.
Yeah.
I think in the pilot, that was his real hair. Maybe.
Yes.
And then, but the last two episodes, they must have filmed this explodey scene early before the others. I haven't listened to the pod, so I don't know. Because they put clear, they shaved him for this shot. Or something like, it must have been. And then they put this helmet hair on him and needed to have like a chin strap. And like a mini pearl tag.
And his beard doesn't match.
His beard doesn't match. His yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now we have the, so now
and
we
he
have
wore that friend. With his, what's it? The Gilligan's Island outfit.
Oh, yeah,
cowboy thing.
Yeah, he looked like he looked like he was on Match Game or something.
Oh,
you
man.
Know, like trying to guess the topic. So now we have Heisenberg, and you guys, this is the placement. These two episodes where we've seen in the development of the characters and their motivations and their vulnerabilities
mm-hmm.
and their tragic flaws, and now their heroic poses.
Mm-hmm.
We are full Pinkman in the brain. We are
mm-hmm.
in with Tuco.
Yep.
And we have Heisenberg has emerged.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we really start rocking. So
yep.
If you caught up to this point,
here
don't
comes
stop
the
now,
ride.
Bitch. Don't stop now.
And on that note.
On that note.
We have Dexter to go watch.
We have Dexter to go watch. And until next time, I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart.
Bye.
Bye.
It is such a good night to kiss. It is such a good night to dance. It is such a good night to Scooby-Dee-Dooby-Doo, Scooby-Dee-Dooby-Doo, Scooby-Dee-Dooby-Doo love. It is such a good night to kiss. It is such a good night to dance. It is such a good night to Scooby-Dee-Dooby-Doo, Scooby-Dee-Dooby-Doo, Scooby-Dee-Dooby-Doo love.